Welcome to today's virtual workshop for the draft REP contract for the Illinois Power Agency's initial forward procurement for RECs. My name is Benjamin Chi. I am with NERA. NERA is the procurement administrator for the IPA. Joining me today on this presentation is the director of the IPA, Ms. Anthony Starr, as well as Dr. Chantal Lacasse, who is also with NERA. Dr. Lacasse will be joining us at the end of the presentation to assist with answering any questions as well. So today's webcast is for the procurement of RECs under the initial forward procurement. I will start with a couple of housekeeping items. As you have on this introductory slide, we have a couple of logos at the bottom. We'll use some of the short names here as we move along in this presentation. We have the IPA for the Illinois Power Agency, AIC, or Ameren Illinois for the Ameren Illinois Company, ComEd for the Commonwealth Edison Company, MEC for Mid-American Energy Company, and NERA as the procurement administrator for this procurement event. If you have any questions during this workshop, we encourage you to ask your questions along the way. To do so, please locate the Q&A on the right side of your screen, select all panelists in the Ask box, type in your question, and click Send to submit your questions. The website address is provided here at the bottom of this slide. This is the procurement website, ipa-energyrfp.com. The presentation materials, this presentation, as well as any Q&As that will follow from this presentation, will be posted to the procurement website after this call. For today's call, we are focused on the draft REC contracts that was posted on June 1st, for which we are soliciting supplier comments. This presentation really is to help walk you through the key terms of the REC contract. And for today's agenda, we will walk you through, first of all, the regulatory context and give you some background to what the initial forward procurement is about. We will lay out the structure of the REC contract, for which if you have not done so, you should probably download a copy from the procurement website. We will walk you through the key terms dealing with delivery of RECs, as well as the invoicing requirements, walk you through other provisions that you may find useful or important, and then talk about the comment process for which we are soliciting comments from you. So with that, I will now turn the time over to Mr. Starr to provide us the regulatory background. Mr. Starr?
Great. Thank you, Ben. So I'm Anthony Starr. I'm the director of the Illinois Power Agency. I suspect that if you're on the call today, you have at least a passing knowledge of what's known as Public Act 990906, or the Future Energy Jobs Act. This was the significant legislation that was passed late last year, signed into law in December, and it became into effect on June 1st of this year. The Future Energy Jobs Act does a number of things to revise energy policy in Illinois. What we're focusing on today is one of the changes that affects how the Illinois Renewable Portfolio Standard is changing. There are a number of other changes to the Renewable Portfolio Standard that are going to be manifested over time in what is known as the Long-Term Renewable Resources Procurement Plan. In the past, the Illinois Power Agency has helped utilities in Illinois procure renewable resources through an annual plan we developed for our energy procurements for the utilities' eligible retail customers. We are changing things over the next few years to have a standalone renewable resources plan, and we'll be taking on over a phase and period of about 2 years, renewable resources procurements for a wider set of customers in Illinois, most notably those who were served by alternative retail electric suppliers, as well as hourly priced customers. So we are going to be having a process in over the course of this year to develop that plan, we've held workshops recently that I will speak about in a moment to help sort of lay out what the new plan will look like and what the long-term vision for renewables in Illinois will be. However, that process does take a while to put together a plan, have it have the appropriate public comment, and then the regulatory approval process, let alone the implementation of the new procurements and plans and programs that come out of it. So in developing the what became Public Act 990906, the General Assembly included in it this concept of the initial forward procurement. And this was a way to really jumpstart the development of new renewable resources to serve Illinois, something that can happen while we are developing this plan that will be a broader framework and give us a future opportunities. In the meantime, we have the opportunity for the initial forward procurement, which calls for the procurement of 1 million RECs annually from new utility-scale wind and 1 million RECs annually from new utility-scale solar and brownfield site photovoltaic projects. The contracts from this procurement will be, as said in the law, require the 15-year delivery of RECs with initial delivery starting at June 1, 2019 at the earliest. They must be up and running by June 1st, 2021. And the point of today's call, obviously, is to go into some more detail about the proposed contract for the procurement, and we will also discuss a little bit the subsequent steps in the process of the procurement. Under the law, we have the option to let me rephrase that. Under the law, we have the opportunity to have one procurement event for utility-scale wind and multiple events for utility-scale solar and brownfield. We've made the decision based upon input from the industry that while the law gave us 160 days to conduct the utility scale wind from the June 1st effective date, because there was interest from the industry of holding the procurement as soon as possible, and with the law taking effect June 1st, the release of the contracts on that date, we are now in the formal procurement process. We are holding the procurement earlier than we are required to under the law because of the input from the industry of wanting to get it in place sooner rather than later to be able to take advantage of this year's tax credits. We also are on track to hold the first of the round of the solar procurement in conjunction with the wind. When we first went into this, we weren't sure whether or not we would be able to keep things on a consistent path or whether we would have to take different approaches for solar and for wind, but it seems like we've been successful in keeping the first round of solar on track with the wind, and we are planning that there will be subsequent solar events, procurement events over the course of the next year. This all will lead to a bid date for this procurement of August 10th, and Ben, I'm sure we'll get into more details on the schedule a little bit later. Next slide. Just to keep things clear, because I know it can sometimes be a little confusing. The Illinois Power Agency is the state agency that is in charge of implementing these aspects of the Renewable Portfolio Standard. NERA is our procurement administrator who runs our actual procurement events. So that is one of the reasons we have two websites. So if you look at the website on the left of this slide, this is the website specifically for procurements. This procurement in particular, other procurements we've run per our prior plans and will run in the future once the long-term renewable resources procurement plan is developed. This is where you will find contracts, rules for the RFPs. This is where you'll go to register. This is where if you have specific questions about procurement events, they should be handled through the links on that website that bring you to the opportunity to ask questions of the procurement administrator. The website that's shown on the right is the Illinois Power Agency's website. This is our agency's general website. This is where you will find information about our procurement plans, both past ones, our current one, as well as information about the long-term renewable resources procurement plan we are developing. If you click under renewable resources, you can get to some information about some of the workshops that we've held recently. There are a number of presentations there that will dive into much more detail about various aspects of the new RPS, including the initial forward procurement, but also some other aspects as well. And then over time, that website will evolve to be really the portal to the new programs that we will be offering in the future, as well as our procurements. So again, if you're focusing in on the things related to the initial forward procurement, the IPAEnergyRFP.com website is where to go. If you're trying to understand the RPS more generally, please come to the IPA's website. And with that, I'll turn it back to Ben.
Thank you, Mr. Starr. And for the next section, we'll walk you through the key terms of the REC contract. We have held a workshop, as Mr. Starr has mentioned, on May 10th. You can find that presentation and some information on the IPA's website, the main website on the right of the screen earlier. But since after the workshop, we have taken the term sheet and have fleshed out the details in a REC contract for which we have posted online and are soliciting your comments at this time. So, to be clear, the initial forward procurement is a competitive process for the procurement of RECs, and the way that the REC contracts will come into place is through the awards from the competitive process. Through the competitive process, you, the sellers, or suppliers will indicate in your proposal, in your response to the RFP, a purchase price and the total number of RECs that you will deliver annually from your specific project. All this information will be in your response to the RFP or in your proposal. Once you are selected as a winning bidder, and the project is associated with a winning bid, then the procurement administrator, NERA, will allocate the RECs from your winning project among the utilities, Hameron, Illinois, AIC, ComEd, and MEC. You must be willing to sign the contract with all three utilities. It's separate contracts. At this time, it's posted online as one harmonized contract, but there will be multiple counterparties you should expect to sign with. Maybe I should rephrase that, not multiple counterparties in one contract, but that you have separate contracts with multiple utilities. You do not get to choose the counterparty, and importantly, the IPA, the Illinois Power Agency, is not the counterparty. The counterparties will be the utilities. The winning bid price that you name in your proposal, for which is accepted and selected as the winning bid, will be the purchase price in each of these contracts. But the quantity, again, will then be allocated among the various or multiple utility contracts. The contracts are administered separately by each applicable utility. And this contract is has sort of two components to it. There is a component for which obligation is for you to build your project, and then subsequently, the second component is for you to deliver the RECs from your specific projects. It's unit contingent, and it is for the procurement of RECs from your project. And to be clear, we're not buying your projects, we're buying the RECs from your project. And there is not a separate energy component. The payment under the contract is for RECs only. I'll start here with a disclaimer before I head into the terms of the contract. So the draft contract was posted on June 1st for your comments. Comments are due to us by June 14. At some point, once we take your comments into consideration, we will produce a final contract expected to be posted June 27. Today's call is for the single purpose of walking you through the draft contract terms so that you understand what the intent is, as well as what the main terms are. And the disclaimer is this: any statements that we make on this call that describes or refer to the draft REC contract are summaries only and are qualified in their entirety by our reference to the draft REC contract, which have been posted or has been posted on June 1st on the procurement website. When the draft contract becomes the final REC contract, again estimated or expected to be posted June 27, that will become the governing agreement. That will be the standard agreement that all parties, all bidders, must agree to in advance of bid submission. And you, the bidders, the sellers, the suppliers, will bear the full responsibility for reviewing and understanding the final REC contract once it becomes final. In terms of the structure of the REC contract is a single document that has a cover sheet at the front, which is the main body, and then has these various exhibits. Exhibit A will contain the form of the standard guarantee. Exhibit B will be the forms of the letters of credit. There are two options there. And Exhibit C will be the ABA, EMAA Core, Renewable Energy Certificate Purchase and Sale Agreement, what we call the Master REC Agreement. The REC contract itself, again, as I said, is a single document that has these exhibits. It will be based off of the Master REC Agreement, but the main body itself is also known as the cover sheet that will contain specific terms related to the requirements for this transaction. It will talk about the requirements for the project installation, for the delivery obligations, for how you must invoice on a timely basis, and how the utilities will pay you during the delivery term for your RECs. It will contain in the cover sheet a table. It's the only table in the cover sheet, really. It's table one, that will provide pricing and quantity details, as well as some of the project details that come out of the RFP. So the amount of RECs for which you will win and for which you're obligated to deliver will be provided in the table one. The pricing details, the price per REC for which the utilities will pay you, is also found in table one. Importantly, as I have said, Exhibit C contains the Master REC Agreement. The cover sheet itself has a Section 10 that contains the modifications to the Master REC Agreement. So unless it is amended in the cover sheet, the Master REC Agreement language is the one that controls. So this is sort of, in a nutshell, high-level summary of the REC contract structure. So in terms of project requirements, the project requirements is principally described in Section 5 of the cover sheet. On the front part of the REC contract, you will find a list of the project requirements. So while this contract is for the procurement of RECs only, this is a unit contingent. It is specific to the project that comes out of selected as a winning project through the RFP. So the project that being selected must be one of these project. We call it the class of resource in the contract, or resource types more generally. It must be a utility-scale solar project, a utility-scale wind project, or a brownfield site photovoltaic or PV project. It must be a new project, meaning that the initial meter read data is recorded by GETS or MRETS, PGM, EIS, GETS, or MRETS, must occur or be recorded after June 1st, 2017, meaning that the earliest date that the initial meter read date as recorded by GETS or MRETS must be on or after June 2nd, 2017. It must not be a unit that is having costs that are being recovered through rates regulated by Illinois or other states. and it must be located in Illinois. If it is not located in Illinois, it can be located in a state that is adjacent to Illinois, but must meet the specific public interest criteria that is referenced in Public Act 99-0906, the application of which and the public interest criteria will be spelled out in the IPA's initial renewable resources procurement plan, for which is subject to the approval of the Illinois Commerce Commission. That will be approved at a later point in time, but if you are intending to locate your project in a state adjacent to Illinois, just take note that it must meet those specific requirements when these requirements become approved and binding and controlling at that point. The site of the project will be described in your RFP response, and the site of the actual project when it is installed must be substantially as described in your proposal through the RFP. And for the development of solar PV projects, just take note that there are requirements that are laid down in the law for the installation to be installed by qualified persons. So these terms that I have mentioned, there are many of these terms that I have just mentioned here, are all found in Public Act 990906, for which our hands are tight and they are kind of quite prescriptive and ordered in the law. Once the installation is in place, once the initial meter read date has occurred and has been interconnected or registered with GETS or MRETs, the RECs that are delivered through these utility contracts will be standard RECs, meaning that they will include all of the environmental attributes. The RECs must be from the project selected through the RFP. It cannot be from a different project, and they must be transferred to the buyer's GETS and MRETs account in an unretired state. You will be responsible for the GETS and MRETs fee, GETS or MRETs fee, for which you are using to transfer into the buyer's account, and buyer will be responsible for their own fees related to their usage in GETS or MRETs. All RECs that are delivered to the buyer's account in a delivery year must allow the buyer to comply with the Illinois Renewable Portfolio Standards. This product is what we call regulatorily continuing. It must allow the buyer to comply with the RPS, and it is for that purpose that the buyer is procuring RECs from your projects. Per the law, the RECs can be delivered to the GETS and MRETs account, but no earlier than June 1st, 2019. So if you have built a project, it's installed, it has been energized, it is registered with GETS and MRETs, and it has started producing RECs, the first REC delivery date for which we can accept your RECs will be June 1, 2019. And per the law as well, the first REC delivery, if the project is not up and running by then, the first REC delivery must occur no later than June 1st, 2021. If you cannot deliver your first REC from the project by June 1, 2021, then the contract will be terminated and you will lose the collateral requirement that is indicated in your contract. In terms of the transaction quantities as well as the purchase price, as I had mentioned earlier, these price and quantity details will be listed in Table 1 of the contract. And one thing to note importantly is that you will name through the RFP response a quantity that you are comfortable with for delivering on an annual basis. What we have in Table 1 is the allocated quantity to that particular utility. So it is what we call the annual quantity. The sum of the annual quantities across the multiple contracts for that project must sum up to the annual quantity that you as a seller have offered through the RFP process for which you have won the contract that is associated with the winning project. That is what we call the annual quantity in the contract. The annual quantity will be indicated in Table 1 of the contract. The annual quantity may be different across the multiple contracts for that project. And importantly, once it is fixed in Table 1, the annual quantity does not change. It is that same quantity that will follow through the delivery term. And I will explain some of these lingo and words that I just mentioned on the delivery term and the delivery obligations in the next couple of slides. There is also a term we call the maximum contract quantity. That's the maximum in which quantity in which we can be allowed to accept through the 15-year delivery term if you deliver the annual quantity or the maximum quantity in each delivery year. And the maximum contract quantity is simply the annual quantity times 15. In the example we provide here, we'll start with the left. Assuming that you participate in the RFP, you win to deliver 6,000 racks annually from your project, and it's a brownfield site photovoltaic project located in Illinois at the price of $200 per rack. And this winning quantity is then allocated by us, the procurement administrator, across the three utilities, also known as the buyer in each of the contract. And the annual quantity is 1,350 or 1,350 racks per year for AIC, 3,650 racks per year for ComEd, and 1,000 racks per year for MEC. The purchase price will be the same across these multiple contracts or each of these contracts, but the quantity, the 6,000 racks annually that you have proposed to sell will be divided among the utilities. Over on the right, you see the Table 1 replicated. This is for illustration, the MEC contract for Mid-American Energy Company. You see that the class of resource is indicated as the brownfield site PV project with an annual quantity of 1,000 racks, which is what has been allocated for your project to Mid-American Energy Company. The maximum contract quantity is simply 15,000 racks, and the purchase price is the same across all of the utility contracts at $200 per rack. And the tracking system must be either GATS or MRETS. You will register your project with one of the tracking facilities. And the racks that come out of your project must be from one of these tracking registries. I will cover the credit requirements here, and then I will talk about the delivery obligations after. So in terms of the credit requirements, you will find this term collateral requirement. Collateral requirement is the requirement that you must meet, and it is simply at the start of the contract set at 150% of the annual contract value. Again, this is not the maximum contract value, but this is the value associated with the annual quantity, 1 year's worth of racks. And basically, To be more precise, the annual contract value is simply the annual quantity allocated to that particular contract times the purchase price. 150% of that is what is the requirement before delivery term starts. Once you deliver one rack to the utility, it gets reduced from 150% of the annual contract value to 100% of the annual contract value. The collateral requirement is subject to a floor, which is set at $50,000 as a minimum value for the collateral requirement from the effective date of the contract. Once you sign the contract, it is set at a minimum of $50,000 or 150% of the annual contract value. And this minimum floor will be binding or will control through the first 10 years of the delivery term. So from the effective date through the first 10 delivery years. How this will work is that for credit-worthy entities, you'll be granted a unsecured line of credit from each of the utilities. In particular, unsecured credit will be granted to entities that have an investment-grade rating or that rely on a guarantor that has an investment-grade rating. When we say investment-grade rating, what we're after is triple B minus from S&P or Fitch and Baa3 or above from Moody's. The collateral threshold, or what is commonly known as the unsecured credit, will be $2.5 million if you meet the minimum credit rating. If you do not have an investment grade rating or have a guarantor that you can rely on that has an investment grade rating, then you will not be granted any unsecured credit. Importantly, if you're relying on a guarantor's credit worthiness, just take note that an acceptable guarantee must be in place and accepted by the utility first before unsecured credit is granted to you. Any exposure, meaning the collateral requirement that is in excess of the collateral threshold of the unsecured credit, must be met with a letter of credit or cash. The actual standard form of the guarantee, and there are three forms, one for each utility. It's found in Exhibit A of the contract, and the letter of credit is also found in the REC contract as Exhibit B, and there are, as I said, two options for which you can use for the letters of credit. Now, for the important piece that I know many of you are interested in, we'll walk through quickly here the delivery obligations and concepts so that you know how the terms, the language, and the information hangs together in the contract. So I will have to talk through with you here some of the timing considerations. You'll find some of these terms appear in the contract. Where we talk about the delivery term, what we mean here is the time period after your project is installed, after the project has completed its registration with GATS or AMRATS, and once the project has the first REC issued by the tracking system. That's the start of the delivery term. The delivery term will then run for 15 years after the start of that delivery term. If your project is installed and energized earlier than June 1st, 2019, then the earliest date for your delivery term will be June 1st, 2019. And it will run 15 years after. So with that, what I will bring up to your attention are two things. One, it is tied to when the first REC is issued by GATS or AMRATS for the project. It is not tied to when your first delivery to a particular utility has occurred. So meaning, the second point here, that the delivery term will be common across the multiple contracts for that project. you will start at the same time and you will consummate at the same time. That's the 15-year delivery term. The delivery term will then be divided into delivery years. Each delivery year will run generally from June 1 through May 31st of the following calendar year. This is how we talk about the delivery years, and the way to understand the concept of the delivery years is that the 15-year delivery term, you are to have these delivery obligations. The delivery obligations are demarcated by these delivery year. There will be delivery obligations that you must meet in each delivery year. But it does not mean that you deliver your racks and get paid for those racks only at the end of the delivery year. Here we have envisaged to the contracts payment and settlement on a monthly basis. So in each delivery year will contain delivery months, and there will be at a maximum 12 delivery months in each delivery year. After each delivery month, when you deliver your racks to the utility, once the delivery month has ended, invoices are due to the buyer, AIC, ComEd, or Mid-American Energy Company, by the 10th day after the delivery month. Do not miss that delivery invoice due date, because once you miss that, you will have to wait for the next delivery month before you can submit your invoice. Payments by the utility are due by the end of the month following the delivery month, meaning the end of the month for which they received the timely invoice from you. Now, a very key point here is on vintage, which is what I'm covering at the bottom of slide 16. We have gone through the workshop. We have noted all of your input on banking, and essentially how we are handling banking is through the vintage and it's what we are covering here at the bottom of slide 16. So if you miss this, then you will miss how we are dealing with banking. So just take note of this here on the bottom of slide 16. So two key points here to note. You will not find the terms banking in the contract. You will not find the terms vintage in the contract. But the contract itself is fairly flexible. As long as buyer, upon receipt of your RECs in a delivery year, can comply with the Illinois RPS using those RECs in that delivery year, then the RECs that are delivered to buyer need not be from the same delivery year, as long as the RECs are generated or have the underlying electricity generated anytime in the 15-year delivery term, or the two additional months prior to the delivery term. So the earliest time in which the RECs can be delivered, the vintage, so to speak, as the industry understands the term, must be based on electricity that is generated no earlier than April 1st, 2019, because the earliest date in which the delivery term will start is June 1st, 2019. So if you have a project, for example, that has been installed and generating RECs before June 1st, 2019, the earliest vintage, earliest time in which the electricity, the underlying electricity must be based off of, can be no earlier than April 1st, 2019. And throughout this 15-year term, the RECs can be generated, or rather can be delivered from electricity generated any time prior to that. This is the flexibility that is allowed to all sellers. You can use RECs that are generated early on in the delivery term to fulfill your delivery obligations later on in the delivery term. So now the question, what is my delivery obligation if I'm a seller, if I want a contract with two or three of these utilities. So the obligation is really what we call the delivery year requirement. This is a defined term in the contract. This is generally the same as the annual quantity. Again, the annual quantity does not change once it is set in Table 1. It remains through to the end of the expiry of the contract. The delivery year requirement is basically the annual quantity that you must meet in each delivery year, and I'll go through an example on the next slide, except for the first 365 days of the delivery term, as well as the last delivery year within the delivery term. So this will take care of some flexibility that we afford for the front end of the delivery term, as well as some proration that will occur if your delivery term does not start on June 1st, therefore end with a full 12 months at the back end of your delivery term. So the first 365 days, so you know, we have afforded additional flexibility to reduce the requirement to simply 50% of the annual quantity. We'll prorate that and adjust that if the delivery period for the first 365 days straddles two delivery years. But generally, the concept is we understand that there will be, for example, startup problems. Your system as built may have problems at the first in the first year. You may not be able to deliver your all of your annual quantity as you have envisaged through the process. You can deliver a lesser quantity, but at a minimum, we require that you hit 50%. If you have excess racks, you can sell it to the utility up to the full amount, 100% of that annual quantity, or if it straddles two delivery years, the prorated quantity that will commensurate with 100% of that. And in general, in any delivery year after that, you must meet the annual quantity. Any excess racks that you produce then is your property. You can sell it to any other party that you like. You can also keep it for a year in which you may be short. And so that is essentially how we're dealing with banking. This is at your discretion. If you sell it to the utility in the first 365 days, up to 100%, then you'll be paid for those racks. But the utility in general can only pay you the delivery year requirement, up to 100% of that delivery year requirement each delivery year and no more. And now here are the main consequences for not meeting your delivery year requirement. This is covered at the bottom of this slide 17. So it is an event of default. Your contract will be terminated and you'll lose your collateral requirement if you fail to meet the delivery year requirement in any three or more delivery years. Doesn't need to be consecutive, but if you miss three or more years and the shortfall amounts hits, means that it equals or exceeds the annual quantity, then it will be deemed an event of default. So just take note, the two triggers are there that you must hit before an event of default is triggered. You must both miss three or more delivery years and that the shortfall amount cumulatively must have met or exceeded the annual quantity. So that's the hard line that we are drawing before we terminate your contract. It's at this point a very flexible requirement, but if you miss that, then again, it's an event of default under the contract. Here, I'm going to walk you through quickly what the delivery requirement that has just been explained is and how we calculate that. So this is the fixed requirement that you must meet under the contract. And how it works is through these mechanisms. Again, don't be too hung up on the term. daily quantity and annual quantity. That is not what you must meet. What you must meet is what we call the delivery year requirement. These terms, the daily quantity and the annual quantity, are just there so that they serve as a mechanism to how to get to the delivery year requirement. It is not very deep. It's not very difficult. But once you see the example, you will understand what I mean. So the delivery year requirement, again, is the sum of the daily quantity for each delivery day in the delivery year. The daily quantity is simply the annual quantity divided by 365 days, or if it's a leap year or is in a delivery year that contains a leap year, then it is divided by 366 days. And for the first 365 days of the delivery term, it can be reduced by 50% at your discretion, meaning that if you want to deliver more than 50%, then you are able to do so and get paid for that up to 100%. But otherwise, that's the minimum before you get one strike in your contract. Again, if you get three strikes and cumulatively, your shortfall amounts through the term of the contract hits 1 year's worth of delivery, the annual quantity, then your contract will be terminated. So on the left side of the box, on this slide 18, you'll find the annual quantity for this contract is, for simplicity, 3,650 racks, easily divisible by 365 days in the delivery term that starts August 1st, 2020 through the 15 years after July 31st, 2035. So here you see a kind of complicated example where you have a delivery year that in the term that is not a full delivery year at the start and therefore not a full delivery year at the end. For the first 365 days, it will cover the period August 1st, 2020 through July 31st, 2021, thereby straddling two delivery years. Again, the delivery year has a requirement that you have to meet, which is the delivery year requirement, the number of racks you must hit. For the first 365 days, the daily quantity as unadjusted is simply 10 racks. You take 3,650 racks, which is the annual quantity, divide that by 365 days, that gets you to 10 racks on a daily basis. As I said earlier, for the first 365 days, you have at your discretion an ability to reduce that to a minimum of 5 racks, in this example, or 50% of the daily requirement, of the unadjusted daily requirement. How you get to the daily, the delivery year requirement for each delivery year is simply multiplying the daily requirement times the number of days in that delivery year within the delivery term. So in this example on the right, for the first delivery year, will contain 304 days from the period August 1, 2020 through the end of the delivery year, May 31st, 2021. That has 304 days there. The unadjusted amount is 3,040 racks. You can deliver all 3,040 racks to the buyer. They will pay you for that and no more. Or you can deliver less, but no less than 1,520 racks, which is just the 50% of that. For the second delivery year, we will consider the fact that part of the 365-day period falls into the second delivery year as well. And to be clear, you have 61 days, the month of June 1, 2021, and July 31st, 2021. That's the first 2 months of the second delivery year that falls into the second delivery year, but is part of the 365 days of the delivery term, the first 365 days. So we prorate that and reduce the daily quantity up to 5, multiply that by 61 days, and then you add the daily quantity of 10 days for the remaining 304 days to get to the minimum daily year requirement of 3,345 racks at the and the maximum of the annual quantity, which is 3,650 racks. I think the example is fairly straightforward. Take some time to review that. The presentation will be posted after this call for you to review at your leisure. And for the rest of the delivery years, year 3 to year 15, it will simply be the annual quantity, and we prorate that for the last delivery year, year 16, at 610 racks, which is just 10 racks times the number of days in the last delivery year or partial delivery year. We do allow for some flexibility as well when it comes to external events, which we include as part of the force majeure requirements. The force majeure is spelled out in the master rec contract in Article 6. We amended it with the requirements adapted for this transaction in the cover sheet of the rec contract as it amends Article 6 of the master rec agreement. And what we consider as force majeure are external events, acts of God. A hurricane runs through your project. If there is flooding, if there is a volcano eruption or a fire, or what we commonly term as acts of God, those are considered part of external events included in force majeure. Or if there is a terrorist attack and a war or riot or hostility or riots, these are also covered as part of force majeure events. Failure by GETS or MRATs, if for whatever reason the system breaks down, they cannot issue the RECs and allow you to transfer your RECs to buyer's account for compliance, that too would be considered a force majeure event. Besides that, what we do not consider force majeure events is your ability to sell it elsewhere. If you get a better price in the market and want to sell it elsewhere, that's not considered a force majeure event. The same holds true for buyers. They cannot find a resale value or want to sell it elsewhere but cannot pay you. That itself is not a force majeure event. For you as a seller, just take note, curtailment by the RTO, please assess the risk as you find a site to place your project. Curtailment by RTO is not considered a force majeure event. If the wind does not blow or the sun does not shine on your project and it's insufficient to meet the delivery year requirement, that's not considered a force majeure event. If your equipment is installed in a shoddy manner and it breaks down, that is not considered a force majeure event. And any loss of tax credits or denials of deductions or if additional taxes have been imposed on you, that is not grounds for a force majeure event, and you must still deliver your RECs to buyer under the REC contract. I will close off the main provisions here, talking about other events of default. In general, our hands are kind of tied with some of these items listed here as events of default that we have carved out in addition to what is listed in Article 5 of the Master Rec Agreement as amended in the cover sheet. So here, for one, if the RECs are not delivered, your first REC delivery in the contract is not delivered to the applicable utility by June 1, 2021, then the contract will be terminated and you will lose your collateral requirement. This is covered in Article or Section 3 in the cover sheet. If there is a shortfall for more than 3 years, three or more years to be more precise, and the shortfall amounts cumulatively in these shortfall years equals or exceeds the annual quantity, then the contract will be terminated. You will lose your collateral requirement, and buyer will have other remedies available under the REC contract. If in a year in which you are short, you cannot meet the delivery requirement, just take note that the representation that you're making is that you have not withheld any of your RECs that were issued to you in that delivery year by GAS or NREC. And you have not sold or transferred those RECs to any other party besides AIC, ComEd, and MEC in that shortfall year. If you are found to have sold your RECs to other third parties or have kept those RECs issued to you in that delivery year, and therefore you are short in that delivery year or short for whatever reason and have found to do so, then you will have your contract terminated as well, and your collateral will be lost, and you will be owing to buyer whatever remedies that are allowed under the REC contract. As stated in the law, the project cannot be a generating unit whose cost is recovered through rates regulated by a utility in Illinois or other state or states. If it's found to be true, subsequent to the project installation, then take note, at any point in time after you sign the agreement, you will lose 50% of the annual contract value, and that any payments, if REC delivery has started that has been paid to you, by law, you must pay back to the utility 100%, 110% of those cumulative payments that have been paid by you, the greater of those two amounts. That's what you are responsible to pay buyer as the contract is being terminated. If the project is in a state that is not in Illinois, but is adjacent to Illinois, but is not meeting the application of or the public interest criteria, then you will stand to have your contract terminated as well and lose your collateral requirement. The latter two of these events are noted in Section 5 of the cover sheet, and the first three items are noted in Section 3 of the cover sheet. For the full list of events or defaults, I ask that you review the REC contract. The material obligations are listed fully in the REC contract, and Article 5 of the Master REC Agreement, for which is provided in Exhibit C as amended in the cover sheet, will provide you more precise events of defaults as well as remedies in the event of a default. Now, we'll walk you through the comment process by way of ending this presentation portion of this workshop before we open up for questions. So everything that I've explained to you so far is spelled out, described in full in the contracts as posted on June 1st. The key terms that you should note that we have covered on this contract are Section 3 of the cover sheet that talks about delivery and quantities that will be provided and your obligations thereof in direct contract. Project information, how the project must be new, how it must be registered in GATS and MRETS, how it have requirements dealing with installation. They are all spelled out in Section 5. As well as in other parts of the REC contract. And Section 10 of the cover sheet will have amendments that modifies the Master REC Agreement, as well as provide additional definitions and terms adapted for this transaction. Please download the REC contract if you have not done so already. It's found on the procurement website. It is also found if you click on the link in the participation information for which you were able to jump on this WebEx platform and call in. In that announcement, there is a link there to the procurement website for which you can find the draft agreement. Your comments are due back to us by June 14, a week from now, and a week and a day from now, by 6 p.m. Central Prevailing Time. We ask that you provide your comments back to us in track changes in red line. It's very important that you do that for us in Microsoft Word format so that we understand how you're formulating your edits and your proposed changes. Otherwise, we have no idea what you're proposing, and it will be more challenging for us to understand what you're trying to achieve. So we ask that you provide your comments to us and track changes, redline the language that you're proposing to change, and provide explanatory notes next to your redlines so that we understand. Note it in some form in highlights or something in square brackets so that we know why you're changing what you're changing. And then simply attach your draft contract in redline and submit it to us at this email address, illinois-rfp@mira.com. We will evaluate all of the comments, and we will consider them as we finalize the contract. The comments will be shared and discussed with each of the utilities, AIC, Comet, MEC, with the IPA, with the procurement monitor, as well as with staff of the Illinois Commerce Commission. So that is the process, and with that, I will open up this time for questions. To submit your questions, simply locate the Q&A on the right side of your screen, select all panelists in the Ask box, type in your questions, and click Send to submit your questions to us. And with that, as I await your questions, we will end off the presentation portion of this workshop.